وَلَقَدْ آتَيْنَا إِبْرَاهِيمَ رُشْدَهُ مِنْ قَبْلُ وَكُنَّا بِهِ عَالِمِينَ
Surely, we had bestowed wisdom upon Abraham, peace be upon him, even earlier, and we knew him well. Surely, we had bestowed wisdom upon Abraham, peace be upon him, even earlier, and we knew him well.
We have translated the Arabic word rashd as discretion, which signifies a person's ability to distinguish between right and wrong, and to follow whatever is right and avoid whatever is wrong. Since this expression connotes both right conduct and wisdom, our translation covers both meanings. Abraham, peace be upon him, owed his wisdom to God's favor, since it is God who bestowed his wisdom upon him. The words Kunna bihi a'limina, meaning we knew him well, signifies that God's favor was not arbitrary. He knew full well what kind of man Abraham, peace be upon him, was, and so he lavished his favors on him in consideration of that merit. Elsewhere, the Quran points out that God knows who is worthy of being entrusted with his message. Allah knows best where to place his message. Al-An'am 6:124. Implicit in this statement is a subtle rejoinder to the hostile statements which the Quraysh were wont to make against the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. They decried his designation as God's messenger, saying that there was nothing very special about him to justify such a position. This charge is refuted at several different places in the Quran and in various ways. In the present verse, only an implicit point is made with reference to Abraham's selection as God's messenger. The same kind of rejoinder as made against the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, could also have been made against Abraham when he, out of all the people living in Mesopotamia, was chosen as God's messenger. What the Quran says here is that God knew Abraham's mettle well, so he chose him for this great favor to the exclusion of all others. It is useful to study the following passages in the Quran dealing with Abraham's character and qualities.
إِذْ قَالَ لِأَبِيهِ وَقَوْمِهِ مَا هَذِهِ التَّمَاثِيلُ الَّتِي أَنْتُمْ لَهَا عَاكِفُونَ
Recall when he said to his father and his people, What are these images to which you are clinging with devotion? Recall.
Before trying to comprehend the full meaning of the event mentioned in the following verses, one should recall that the Quraysh owed Abraham, peace be upon him, a great deal. The Kaaba, which gave them a singular preeminence in the whole of Arabia, was constructed by him. The prestige enjoyed by the Quraysh, therefore, was a direct result of their being Abraham's offspring, and as such custodians of the shrine constructed by him. If we consider the story of Abraham today, peace be upon him, and in lands far removed from Arabia, it impresses us as an instructive historical event. However, in the times and milieu in which this story was narrated, 6th century Arabia, it had a much greater significance. The Quranic account of Abraham dealt a severe blow at the very roots of the religion and the exclusivism, arrogance, and vanity of the Quraysh.
قَالُوا وَجَدْنَا آبَاءَنَا لَهَا عَابِدِينَ
They answered, We found our fathers worshipping them.
قَالَ لَقَدْ كُنْتُمْ أَنْتُمْ وَآبَاؤُكُمْ فِي ضَلَالٍ مُبِينٍ
He said, Certainly, you and your fathers have all been in manifest error.
قَالُوا أَجِئْتَنَا بِالْحَقِّ أَمْ أَنْتَ مِنَ اللَّاعِبِينَ
They said, Are you expressing your true ideas before us, or are you jesting? They said, Are you expressing your true ideas before us, or are you jesting?
Literally, it may be rendered as, Are you expressing your true ideas before us, or are you jesting? The real thrust of the verse, however, is what we have conveyed by our own translation. The unbelievers were so convinced of the truth of their religion that they were not even prepared to take Abraham's message seriously, peace be upon him. Hence, they simply dismissed Abraham's statement as a joke They could not believe that the ideas which he expressed could really represent his inner convictions.
قال بل ربكم رب السماوات والأرض الذي فطرهن وأنا على ذلك من الشاهدين.
He said, Nay, but your Lord is the Lord of the heavens and the earth which He created, and to that I bear witness before you.
وتالله لأكيدن أصنامكم بعد أن تولوا مدبرين.
By Allah, I shall certainly carry out my plan against your gods after you are gone. By Allah, I shall certainly carry out my plan against your gods after you are gone.
Abraham, peace be upon him, told the idolaters that if they were not prepared to heed his arguments, he would make them observe how their gods were of no avail, how they were altogether helpless. Once their idols were proven powerless, the error in considering them to be gods and worshipping them would become fully evident. Abraham, however, did not spell out how he intended to demonstrate the helplessness of their idols.
فَجَعَلَهُمْ جُذَاذًا إِلَّا كَبِيرًا لَهُمْ لَعَلَّهُمْ إِلَيْهِ يَرْجِعُونَ
Then he broke them all into pieces, sparing only the Supreme One among them, that they may possibly return to him. Then he broke them all into pieces.
Abraham was on the lookout for the right moment. Once he found there were no worshippers in the temple, nor any keepers to safeguard it, he entered it and demolished all their idols,
sparing only the Supreme One among them, that they may possibly return to him.
The word him in the statement, that they may possibly return to him, could, grammatically speaking, apply either to the Supreme Deity or to Abraham, peace be upon him. If one considers it to relate to a supreme deity, then this statement amounts to a sarcastic remark about their polytheistic beliefs. For if the unbelievers considered some object to be their supreme deity, they also had to reason to assume the possibility that that same supreme deity, in a fit of rage, had struck down all those subordinate deities, reducing them to pieces. It was reasonable, therefore, to ask that supreme deity what had happened to the minor deities whilst under his very nose. Who had done all this? If it were an act of a miscreant, why had the supreme deity not prevented him from carrying out such an outrageous attack? The other alternative is to accept the second interpretation, namely that him is used here to refer to Abraham, peace be upon him. In which case the verse would mean that if the idolaters suspected Abraham, peace be upon him, of being responsible for the demolition of their idols, they would ask him if this was so, and this would provide him with an opportunity to explain his point of view.
قَالُوا مَنْ فَعَلَ هَذَا بِآلِهَتِنَا إِنَّهُ لَمِنَ الظَّالِمِينَ
When they saw the idols in this state, they said, Who has done this to our gods? Surely he is one of the wrongdoers. Some of them said, We heard a youth called Abraham speak ill of them.
قَالُوا فَأْتُوا بِهِ عَلَىٰ أَعْيُنِ النَّاسِ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَشْهَدُونَ
The others said, Bring him then before the eyes of the people, that they may see what will be done to him. The others said, Bring him then before the eyes of the people, that they may see what will be done to him.
This is exactly what Abraham wanted. He wanted to prove to the public at large, rather than merely a small group of priests and worshippers in the temples, that the idols whom they considered to have the power to answer their prayers were instead absolutely powerless. He also wanted to demonstrate the priests' true estimation of these idols as distinct from what they generally professed. The priests committed the same mistake which had earlier been made by Pharaoh. Pharaoh, remember, had assembled the whole populace to watch the tournament between the prophet Moses, peace be upon him, and his magicians. The Quraysh priests now, in a like manner, assembled the general public to bear witness to their interrogation of Abraham, peace be upon him. As already noted, the tournament between Moses, peace be upon him, and the magicians had provided Moses with an opportunity to prove that what he put before them was a miracle and not the magic that they had supposed. Likewise, Abraham's enemies, peace be upon him, enabled him to expose right before everyone's eyes the deceitfulness and fraudulence of the priests.
قالوا أأنت فعلت هذا بآلهتنا يا إبراهيم.
On Abraham's arrival, they said, Abraham, peace be upon him, are you he who has done this to our gods?
قال بل فعله كبيرهم هذا فاسألوهم إن كانوا ينطقون.
He answered, rather, it was this Supreme One who has done it. So ask them if they can speak. He answered, rather, it was this Supreme One who has done it. So ask them if they can speak.
The latter part of the verse indicates that Abraham's statement in the earlier part of the verse, where he ascribes the demolition of their idols to the supreme deity, was not a lie. For in point of fact, Abraham was not making a statement. He was merely presenting an argument that would enable his detractors to realize the truth of the matter. His statement had a clear purpose: to make his opponents recognize that their deities were absolutely powerless, that nothing could be expressed of them. Whenever a person makes a statement when trying to drive home his point, he cannot be called a liar even when his statement is objectively incorrect, for he does not intend to spread something that is contrary to fact. So his audience believes what is incorrect to be true. The speaker's purpose is quite evident both to him and to his audience. It is simply to establish a point. Unfortunately, a report in the Hadith mentions that Abraham, peace be upon him, lied in his life 3 times. One of these instances is mentioned in this verse. The second relates to Abraham's utterance that he was sick, Al-Safat 37:89, and the third to his statement that his wife was his sister. This last instance is not recorded in the Quran but occurs in Genesis 12:13. Now, some people exhibit an exaggerated sense of their devotion to tradition of all kinds. They are so concerned to affirm the veracity of the transmitters of the traditions embodied in Muslim and Al-Bukhari that they do not mind authenticating even those traditions whose contents cast a slur on the truthfulness of prophets. There is, at the same time, another group of people who go to the other extreme. They exploit a few traditions which are apparently inauthentic, such as that mentioned above, and indulge in gross generalization, branding all traditions as spurious, because they can identify a few blatantly erroneous traditions in the collection of hadith. Such people would like the entire corpus of traditions to be cast aside. Such an approach, however, is altogether unjustified, for some defects in a few traditions does not necessarily discredit the entire collection of traditions. At the same time, it is equally wrong to go so far with traditions as to affirm even those traditions which imply a slur on a prophet's veracity. For even if a hadith is sound according to the criteria of the traditionists, for example by means of testing the veracity of its narrators, this does not necessarily mean that it should be blindly accepted as authentic, especially if it contains something that is intrinsically objectionable. The chain of narrators of a tradition may well be quite sound, and yet the content of that tradition be incorrect. In the course of its transmission, for example, the content may have been incorrectly reported. When a tradition contains something which is intrinsically erroneous, it is obvious to any right-thinking person that such a tradition cannot be affirmed, despite the fact that it is supported by a sound chain of narrators. Hence, it is not enough to merely look at the chain of transmission. It is also necessary to consider the content of the tradition. If there is anything wrong with the content, one is quite justified in not accepting that report as true. As for that report which recounts Abraham's, peace be upon him, 3 so-called lies, it is not only flawed because it ascribes lies to a prophet, it should also be dismissed on the grounds that it mentions 3 events of doubtful authenticity. So far as the first is concerned, as we have explained earlier, it cannot be called a lie, even by a person of very ordinary intellect. So why then would we believe that a prophet such as Muhammad, peace be upon him, would consider such a statement to be a lie? After all, Abraham, peace be upon him, only made the point to demonstrate to the idolaters the powerlessness of their false deities. Let us turn to the second instance of lying, Abraham's statement that he was sick. In point of fact, this statement can only be considered contrary to fact if it is conclusively established that Abraham, peace be upon him, was perfectly healthy at that time, that he had no health complaints at all. Now, the Quran makes no mention of Abraham being perfectly healthy at that time, nor is there any other authentic tradition except the present one which makes any statement about it at all. As for the third lie with which Abraham is charged, peace be upon him, referring to his wife as his sister, this is so absurd that one cannot even seriously consider it. The event relates to the time when Abraham, peace be upon him, went to Egypt with his wife Sarah. According to the Bible, Abraham was then 75 years old and his wife a little over 65 years old. At such an advanced age, Abraham, peace be upon him, is supposed to have learned that the Egyptian pharaoh would kill him in order to take his beautiful wife. He therefore told his wife that if the Egyptians forcibly took her to the pharaoh, she was to refer to him as her brother, whilst he was introduce her as his sister, this so as to save his life. See Genesis 12. If in this report this third lie is derived from an improbable and absurd report in the Bible, is it reasonable for a report that consists of such stuff to be ascribed to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, merely on the grounds that its chain of narrators is uninterrupted? It should also be emphasized here that those people who are so exaggeratedly obsessed with everything traditional do no service to hadith. On the contrary, their unreasonableness contributes to a highly negative reaction against hadith and assists those extremists who go to the extent of dismissing the entire corpus of hadith.
فَرَجَعُوا إِلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ فَقَالُوا إِنَّكُمْ أَنتُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ.
Thereupon they turned to their inner selves and said to themselves, surely it is you who are the wrongdoers.
ثُمَّ نُكِسُوا عَلَىٰ رُؤُوسِهِمْ لَقَدْ عَلِمْتَ مَا هَا أُولَاءِ يَنطِقُونَ.
Then their minds were turned upside down, and they said, you know well that they do not speak. Then their minds were turned upside down.
The actual words are
تُكْسِعُوا عَلَىٰ رُؤُوسِهِمْ,
which mean that they were turned upside down on their heads. Some scholars have interpreted this to mean that they put their heads down out of a sense of shame. Such an interpretation, however, would not be consistent with the context of the statement. What this statement really means, and this is also borne out by context, is that on hearing Abraham's reply, peace be upon him, they realized they had erred, for they had taken powerless idols as their deities, idols that were too helpless even to tell others what had befallen them, let alone advise who was responsible for shattering them to pieces. Now, if they were so utterly helpless with regard to themselves, how could they possibly hope to come to the aid of their devotees? Even this realization, however, was soon replaced by a bigoted adherence to their original position. And adamance, as we know, prevents people from thinking rationally.
قَالَ أَفَتَعْبُدُونَ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ مَا لَا يَنفَعُكُمْ شَيْئًا وَلَا يَضُرُّكُمْ.
Abraham, peace be upon him, said, do you then worship beside Allah a thing that can neither benefit you nor hurt you?
أُفٍّ لَكُمْ وَلِمَا تَعْبُدُونَ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ أَفَلَا تَعْقِلُونَ.
Fee upon you and upon all that you worship beside Allah. Do you have no sense?
قَالُوا حَرِّقُوهُ وَانْصُرُوا آلِهَتَكُمْ إِن كُنْتُمْ فَاعِلِينَ.
They said, burn him and help your gods if you are going to do anything.
قُلْنَا يَا نَارُ كُونِي بَرْدًا وَسَلَامًا عَلَىٰ إِبْرَاهِيمَ.
We said, O fire, become coolness and safety for Abraham, peace be upon him. We said, O fire,
become coolness and safety for Abraham, peace be upon him.
Both the words of the verse and the context indicate that Abraham's opponents did indeed carry out their threat. They prepared a pit of fire and threw Abraham, peace be upon him, into it. But God commanded the fire to cool, thus preventing Abraham, peace be upon him, from suffering any harm. This is doubtlessly a miracle narrated by the Quran. Nonetheless, there are still those people who are apologetic about such miracles and who resort to far-fetched interpretations so as to explain them away. They would appear to believe that it is impossible for God to do anything which runs counter to the routine workings of the cosmic system. One may well, if such is their view, ask why they even bother to believe in God in the first place. It's also possible that many of those who resort to such far-fetched explanations do so because the rationalists of our time deny all miracles. If this is the case, one is quite justified in asking why they feel it incumbent upon themselves to convince everybody of their views. One would be better advised to leave well alone those who are not prepared to believe in the Quran as it is no use trying to mold the Quran according to the whims of such people when the Quran resists such attempts at virtually every step. How can such an effort be considered a healthy and justified means of propagating the Quran?
وَأَرَادُوا بِهِ كَيْدًا فَجَعَلْنَاهُمُ الْأَخْسَرِينَ
They had sought to do evil to him, but we caused them to be the worst losers.
وَنَجَّيْنَاهُ وَلُوطًا إِلَى الْأَرْضِ الَّتِي بَارَكْنَا فِيهَا لِلْعَالَمِينَ
And we saved him and Lot, peace be upon him, and brought him to the land upon which we had bestowed our blessings for all the people of the world. And we saved him and Lot, peace be upon him.
According to the Bible, Abraham, peace be upon him, had two brothers, Nahor and Haran. Lot was Haran's son, peace be upon them. Genesis 11:27. It would appear from statements pertaining to Abraham, peace be upon him, in Surah Al-Ankabut, that only one person belonging to Abraham's nation believed in him, and that was Lot, peace be upon him. See Al-Ankabut 29:26.
And brought him to the land upon which we had bestowed our blessings for all the people of the world.
This is a reference to Syria and Palestine, both of which abound in material and spiritual blessings. Materially speaking, this region is among the most fertile areas of the world. Spiritually, it has been the habitat of prophets for over 2,000 years. No other region in the world rivals it in these respects.
وَوَهَبْنَا لَهُ إِسْحَاقَ وَيَعْقُوبَ نَافِلَةً وَكُلًّا جَعَلْنَا صَالِحِينَ
And we bestowed upon him Isaac and Jacob, peace be upon them, as an additional gift, making each righteous. And we bestowed upon him Isaac and Jacob, peace be upon them, as an additional gift.
Not only was Abraham's son Isaac, peace be upon them, invested with prophethood, but also later his grandson Jacob, peace be upon him.
وَجَعَلْنَاهُمْ أَئِمَّةً يَهْدُونَ بِأَمْرِنَا وَأَوْحَيْنَا إِلَيْهِمْ فِعْلَ الْخَيْرَاتِ وَإِقَامَ الصَّلَاةِ وَإِيتَاءَ الزَّكَاةِ وَكَانُوا لَنَا عَابِدِينَ
And we made them into leaders to guide people in accordance with our command. And we inspired them to good works and to establish prayers and to give zakah, purifying alms. They worshipped us alone. And we made them into leaders to guide people in accordance with our command. And we inspired them to good works and to establish prayers and to give zakah, purifying alms. They worshipped us alone.
The Bible makes no mention of this important event in Abraham's life. In fact, the Bible makes no mention of any incident during Abraham's stay in Mesopotamia, peace be upon him. The author of Genesis appears uninterested in Abraham's confrontation with Nimrod, in his dispute with his father and people, in his sustained campaign against idolatry, in his being cast into a pit of fire, and in the circumstances which forced him to forsake his hearth and home, the Bible merely speaks of his migration. There is an even more interesting discrepancy between the Quranic and biblical versions of Abraham's story, peace be upon him. According to the Quran, Abraham's idolatrous father played a leading role in the perpetration of wrongs and excesses against Abraham, peace be upon him. The Bible, however, refers to Abraham's father as among those who migrated to Haran along with his sons, grandsons, and daughters-in-law. Genesis 11:27-32. Yet Abraham at some point was asked by God to abandon Haran and instead to settle in Canaan. Now the Lord said to Abraham, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you." Genesis 12:1. Why this favor was suddenly bestowed on Abraham, peace be upon him, is left unexplained. The Talmud, however, contains most of the details mentioned in the Quran regarding Abraham's conduct during his Mesopotamian days. When one compares the Quranic and Talmudic versions, however, one notes a distinct difference in their thrust. The Talmudic account of Abraham is conspicuously incoherent and full of incredible incidents. In sharp contrast, the Quran presents the important details of Abraham's life, creating the image of a person whose life is far from all those absurdities that might disfigure his personality. For illustrative purposes only, the gist of the Talmudic version of Abraham's life is given below. This will also serve to show how wrong it is to believe that the Quran is derived from either Christian or Judaic sources. The Talmudic version is as follows. The wise men saw a large star in the sky on the night Abraham, peace be upon him, was born, and they advised Nimrud to kill the child born in the house of Therak. The king decided to kill the child, but Therak hid his child and had the child of one of his servant's sons killed instead. Therak thereupon hid his wife and child in a cave where they lived for 10 years. In the 11th year, Abraham, peace be upon him, was taken by Therak to Noah, where he lived under the guidance of Noah and his son Shem for 39 years. During these years, Abraham married his niece Sarah, who was 42 years his younger. Abraham, peace be upon him, left Noah at the age of 50 and returned to his father. There he found that his father was an idolater and had 12 idols in the house representing the 12 months of the year. He tried to preach to his father against idolatry, but when the latter did not listen to him, Abraham then broke all the idols in the house. Seeing this, Therak went straight to Nimrod, advising him that this was the son who the wise men had advised Nimrod to kill on the day of his birth. Therak replied that the babies had been switched at Haran's instigation, Haran being Abraham's brother. Nimrod accordingly let Therak go, but threw Haran into the fire along with Abraham, peace be upon him. Haran was consumed by it, but Abraham walked through the flames unscathed. When Nimrod witnessed this with his own eyes, he cried out, "Servant of the God of heaven, come forth from the fire and stand before me." Thereupon Abraham walked out of the fire and furnace and stood before the king, who bowed before Abraham, peace be upon him, making him a gift of many valuable objects. Thereafter Abraham stayed in Iraq for another 2 years. Meanwhile, Nimrod had a dreadful dream, which the astrologer said came through Abraham, and that he should therefore put Abraham to death. Although Nimrod sent people to kill Abraham, but Abraham came to know of the plot beforehand through Eleazar, a slave presented to him by Nimrod himself. Abraham, peace be upon him, accordingly fled and took refuge with Noah, where Therak also met him secretly on a number of occasions. At last, both father and son decided to leave the country, and Noah and his son Shem also approved of their plan. Accordingly, Therak, along with his son Abraham, peace be upon him, and his grandson Lot, and his granddaughter, and Abraham's wife Sarah, left and went to Haran. With what has been abstracted above, how can a sensible person, after a comparative study of the Quranic and Talmudic accounts, subscribe to the notion that the Quran has borrowed its material from the Talmud?
وَلُوطًا آتَيْنَاهُ حُكْمًا وَعِلْمًا وَنَجَّيْنَاهُ مِنَ الْقَرْيَةِ الَّتِي كَانَتْ تَعْمَلُ الْخَبَائِثَ إِنَّهُمْ كَانُوا قَوْمَ سَوْءٍ فَاسِقِينَ
We bestowed upon Lot sound judgment and knowledge, and we delivered him from the city that was immersed in foul deeds. They were indeed a wicked people, exceedingly disobedient. We bestowed upon Lot sound judgment and knowledge.
In Quranic usage, the grant of hukm and ilm to someone generally means that he has been endowed with prophethood. The word hukm signifies wisdom, the capacity to arrive at the right decisions, as well as the conferment of authority by God. Ilm, knowledge, signifies that true knowledge made available by revelation.
وَأَدْخَلْنَاهُ فِي رَحْمَتِنَا إِنَّهُ مِنَ الصَّالِحِينَ
And we admitted him into our mercy. Verily, he was of the righteous.